Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Get ready for the greats check, too, okay? We'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
And here we go now. Welcome into the playbook for a Wednesday. I'm Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook, joined by PFW's Eric Scalavino. We got a lot of news to catch you up on. If you're just tuning into the program, you're just logging into Patriots.com and clicking on our radio link, well, there's some news to tell you about. There is some movement in the officials. Gripe slash strike with the National Football League. There is movement as well on Bill Belichick's grabbing an official post game and the immediate post game following the 31-30 loss at Baltimore on Saturday or Sunday. And also should say there's some roster movement as well to tell you about. So, Big E, what's happening? First of all, let me get, before we get going here, we'll
sure.
get the email address out, webradio@patriots.com. It's how you get us on email. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398 is how you pick up the phone and give us a call. You can hit us on Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the last name. Submit the friend request if you haven't done it. Then you can post and chat and all kinds of good stuff. And then the Twitter address, @JRook, J-R-O-O-K-E, 0722, @JRook0722. And we share tweets as well throughout the course of the program. Now, before we get started on some of the news today, just quick thoughts on the 31-30 game on Sunday night. Now that we've had 48 hours to 72 hours to digest,
yeah.
What day is this again?
It's Wednesday.
It's
I
all
think.
Running together now. But
yeah.
if it's you're here, it's Wednesday. So as you look back on it before we kind of turn the page officially here,
yep.
What's your lasting impression?
Unfortunately, John, it's going to be how badly the game was officiated. You know, which
yeah.
is why we went with the cover we did on PFW this week.
Right.
It spoiled what was a...
By the way, in case you haven't seen the cover of PFW, are you reffing kidding me?
One of, I think, maybe the best one we've ever
it's
had.
It's a good one. Who
one
came up with that one?
That was actually Fred Kirsch.
Fred's idea.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
Are you reffing kidding
yeah.
me?
Yeah.
All right.
So, unfortunately, it took away from what should have been a really exciting game, much higher scoring than I think a lot of us expected, given the way the two defenses, you know, had been playing,
mm-hmm.
and the remarkably emotional story of Torrey Smith and his brother and what
yeah.
happened, and
yeah.
it detracted from all that just how badly the game got out of hand and how quickly it got out of hand. From the opening kick, I think that, you know, the players were just losing control with each other, pushing, shoving, all fights every other play. It seemed there were about 30 flags thrown, 24 accepted penalties in the game, but about 30 of the flags actually thrown,
mm-hmm.
which, when you think about it, is a flag every other minute. It's a 60-minute game, and there were 30 flags thrown, roughly. Every other minute, they're throwing a flag.
That's nuts.
It was,
that's crazy.
I've never seen more
that
defensive
tells,
holding penalties in a season.
That just tells me that these guys are not trained to really realize or certainly don't understand what holding is and isn't
yeah.
constituted in the National Football League.
And I don't necessarily fault the replacement officials because I think they are trying their absolute best.
Yeah.
It's just they're not equipped to do the job. And the game is suffering as a result. And that's going to be my lasting memory. That game and then the Monday night game with Green Bay Seattle
kind of led us to where we are today.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. That does lead us into the news of the day. And if you have not heard or have been ensconced in your work and your computer and haven't been able to do any searching or what have you today, we can tell you that the NFL and the Referees Association have apparently made enough progress in their negotiations with each other, which started yesterday. And it looks like there's at least a possibility of the locked-out officials coming back to work in time for this week's games. Now, it's been discussed, but I can't imagine that unless they can get an agreement ratified and done, that if they're forced to go with a replacement officials for tomorrow night, and then put the rest of the league on, you know, with the real officials on Sunday, that isn't a tremendous, you know, disadvantage for the Ravens and the Cleveland Browns, who have to play the Thursday night game.
Sure.
So in that instance, I would think that they just have to play one more week with the replacement officials and
to
come
make it
back
fair
next
to everybody.
Week to make
yeah.
it fair to everybody.
I think you're right, because, yeah, those two teams would have a legitimate gripe.
Sure they would. And if I'm one of those two teams, I guarantee you I'm bitching about
yeah,
it. So
no doubt.
I'm just saying that it looks like there's enough progress that's been made. League sources are telling several sources in the media, of which ESPN is one, and I'm sure you've probably got your favorite source as well that you've already heard from if you get your tweets and alerts and what have you. All 121 referees in the NFLRA apparently have already been trained on the new rules. They've already passed physicals. They are prepared to pass physicals immediately. Apparently, once a week, they're going through a huge conference call led by none other than Ed Hockley to make sure that everybody is up to date on all the new rules. There's quizzes going on. So they have been preparing for this moment, allegedly, for several weeks now, at least since
there was no foul on the play. It was
thank
not
you,
a
Ed.
Hold. The defender was just overpowered.
Just overpowered. And we can't wait to hear that. I know there are many of you. My question of the day, however, to you, if you care to chime in on this at webradio@patriots.com, or if you care to tweet this at @jrook0722, or if you care to share on the Facebook page, john.rook, or if you care to hit the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398. My question of the day is, how long until you get pissed off at the real officials? I'm serious. How long is it going to take you to be upset with the real officials? Really, this is why the whole thing is just incredibly ludicrous. I mean, I realize that the replacement refs are out there, and we've seen what they did with the Patriot game and with the Monday night game, and we've talked about it, you know, nonstop on Tuesday's program here in the Playbook. And actually, Eric and I were kind of talking about this in jest before we started the program today, but I feel like that's a legitimate question, because everyone, to a man, is so upset, and to a woman, don't want to leave anybody out, to a human being, with the replacement officials and what's transpired, you know, late in the NFL, you know, weekend, that I cannot imagine. Everybody's going to, you know, breathe a collective sigh of relief, and the real officials are back, and we can get on with the business at hand. But you know that calls are still going to be blown, because that's just the nature of the game.
Sure.
It absolutely is. So, you know, in regards to how long is it going to take you to get upset at the real officials, sure, I think that's a legitimate question, number one. But number two, I would also ask you to just kind of, you know, consider this before you give your answer. Are you really happy that the real guys are coming back? Or, upon further review, said in his best referee parlance, is this much ado about nothing?
You want my answer?
Yes.
I am glad that the regulars are coming back. I would like to see what the terms of the agreement between them and the league are, because I still have, and I'm going to say this until they fix it, the officials should be full-time. They should not have other jobs. They should be spending, if the players, if everybody else in the league who works in this league
right.
is full-time,
right.
Vendors aside, I'm not talking about game day,
right.
you know, parking and that kind of thing. I mean, league office, NFL teams, the players, coaches, they're all full-time. They all spend the off-season honing their craft, trying to fix things that went wrong during the past season, looking ahead to the next season. The officials, as we've seen, who can affect the outcome of a game and are so important to this league, need to be full-time. They need to spend all of the off-season honing their craft, getting better at making calls on the fly, seeing things quicker. It's like any rookie who comes into this league and says, oh, you know, the biggest thing with me is the speed. You know, it's so much faster. Everyone's faster at this league. Things happen so much faster. The officials can't be going out being lawyers and teachers and doing all these other jobs for the other 6 months of the year. They need to be in the film room, on the field, reacting, getting better at making calls on the fly. So we have fewer and fewer instances where there are bad calls made.
Okay.
And until that day happens, I'm not going to be completely happy with the agreement between the league and the officials.
Okay. I think that probably makes sense. Certainly makes sense. And I guess these are things that are going to have to be, you know, ironed out. Maybe we'll even know a little bit more once we get to details of whatever the agreement is between the league and the officials. The fact of the matter is that, and I don't know how many fans actually know this, Eric, but officials put in 36 hours a week working for the NFL. And it's considered a part-time job, and mm-hmm. I think most everybody understands that the National Football League referees are the only of the four major sports in this country, the only referees that are considered part-time employees. For everybody else, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, those officials are full-time employees. So the NFL is the only league that has part-timers, but yet they're asked to work 36 hours a week. So that's darn near, in my book, a full-time job,
pretty
number
close,
one.
Yeah.
Number two, I think a lot of people would tell you that if you do equate this to the real world, and I try not to because the NFL is not the real world, so it does really no good to compare it to the real world. But a lot of people will tell you that, well, I'm considered a full-time employee wherever I work. I don't get benefits, and I work 35 hours a week, and I'm considered full-time. The point here is that at 36 hours a week, my guess is that they really should be considered full-time employees anyway. But if they have other jobs, a lot of them are salesmen and, you know, sell insurance, or they're brokers or attorneys or what have you.
They're very well off.
They're very well off. So that's number one. But I happen to agree. I think that it's time now, and this is where I think that the NFL could nip a lot of these problems in the bud. Right now, if they say, okay, we'll give you your money. We'll give you, you know, what you're talking about doing. We'll give you, you know, maybe we won't call it a pension. Maybe it'll be, all right, we'll give you 401k or whatever, or an IRA or whatever you want to call it, because obviously we know that pensions are dropping like flies around the country. But we'll give you what you want, but you're a full-time employee. And it's going to be up to the official, the referee, the NFL referee, the individual, to decide, okay, do I want a full-time job in the NFL or do I want to keep my own gig? I think we find out who really wants to be in football.
Right.
And who really wants to do this. So let's take that conundrum off the hands of the officials and let's make them full-time employees. Then we'll give you what it is you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how you solve a lot of this problem, because the referees tell me, and I've spoken to several. One in particular. I'm not going to name names because I don't know that it's appropriate in this particular instance, because I don't want to pigeonhole anybody into an opinion here, because he may have changed his mind by now. We don't know. But I do know one very well. He actually does come to Foxborough on several games during the course of the year, two or three games a year. He lives in the area, or in the region, I should say. And I've spoken to him about this, and he says, we don't want to be full-time employees because a lot of guys have careers outside of what they do in the NFL. And that's all fine and good. But if you're really going to speak to the issue of integrity and what have you, then you need to be full-time employees because we're all trying to pull in this thing together.
Yeah.
And you have to put away the outside interest and concentrate on your job, which is managing the integrity of the National Football League.
I'd be willing to grandfather those refs who are in that situation, who don't want to be full-time. I'd be willing to make that compromise. But any ref with fewer than, you know, pick a number, 5 years, 10 years, I don't know, whatever the number is that is agreed upon, fewer than that, those number of years' experience, and any new officials that come through the system have to be full-time, no other jobs, period, end of story.
Right.
End of discussion.
So in other words, we begin slowly,
phasing out
the guys who are
part-time, quote-unquote, guys.
I think that's fair. I think that's certainly fair. If you have under 5 years, you know, 5 years
yeah,
or
whatever the number is,
whatever you come
you
up
did,
with,
yeah.
You're a full-time employee of the league. You don't have any choice.
You have no choice.
That way you certainly can bring those younger officials up to speed quicker in theory, right?
And if there are guys who are that young who still don't want to do it full-time, that's your choice.
That's your choice.
You have another career, go
to
that.
Another career, go to that, and we'll find somebody else.
And if somebody else to say, oh, you know what, pro football is a career for me, I'll take it.
Okay.
Then that's the option you have.
I think that's...
And the older guys,
yeah,
they, you know, they're almost at the end, fine, whatever, you make an exception for them.
Makes sense to me.
Anybody from this point on, you're a full-time employee.
Yep, makes sense to me. All right, let's go back to the phones, because Chester in Portland, Oregon's been hanging on for a while. Chester, welcome inside the playbook.
Hey, guys, good to be in. How you doing? You know, I got a couple points on McCourty and Hightower, but, you know, just to piggyback on the situation with the refs.
Sure.
You know, my hopes here, you know, and I feel like, you know, we're losing the battle, but hopefully we're winning the war, and that there's a hopeful paradigm shift here, and they realize that NFL officiating is an afterthought, and going forward, I just hope that this team is much more of an integral part of the legal system, so to speak, of our precious league. Anyway, going into my topic here, you know, with McCourty, you know, am I the only one that sees this as Merriweather 2.0? You know, hot rookie year, and you know, we talk a lot about how we just can't win the big game anymore. We can't win at the end of the game. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, I feel like McCourty is the one they answered most of this. You know, 70% of the time. As far as Hightower goes, you got to move this guy around. You know, I heard some talk earlier this week about Chandler Jones moving around, and you know, I feel like that's going to happen more as he matures. But you know, I know Hightower saw a lot of that in college. And, you know, with his size, I think he could be another edge guy along with Cunningham to just help get more pressure. You know, seeing Flacco standing there like the Statue of Liberty drove me crazy, and it's good to be in there. You guys have a good one.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Chester.
Well, he went on a little rampage there.
But what do you think about the whole, you know, I can understand why there would be a little bit of dissatisfaction with Devin McCourty right now, because of what we saw.
Terribly.
What we
saw,
but compared to what we saw in his rookie year, and then he certainly admittedly had a down year last year.
Oh, absolutely.
And then through the first three games this year, okay, the first couple of weeks, but then there again was a step back along with he and Arrington. And I thought it was a defensive backfield problem against the Ravens.
I really,
not just McCourty.
No, you're right. And he dropped, you know, a couple of passes that should have been interceptions.
He should have.
No doubt.
Don't those guys drill this?
Yeah.
I mean, they would not have lost that game if he had held on to...
Or if Kyle Arrington didn't trip over the 30-yard line or whatever it was.
Right.
And I mean, he would have had an easy gimme interception on that final drive, and then the quote-unquote field goal, phantom field goal, never would have happened. But back to the McCourty point, I think he overachieved big time in his rookie year. He certainly, you know, greatly underachieved in his second year. And I think he is somewhere in between those two extremes, and I think that's what we've seen so far this year. And I think I think he's become the player that he's going to be in this league. A decent, reliable in that he's out there and healthy and plays consistently, and can make plays here and there, but he's never going to be great.
Is he better as a safety?
Saw no evidence of that based on the few times he played safety last year.
So the rookie season where he made the Pro Bowl is an anomaly.
Yes, and so is how terribly he played last year. They both are. They're both anomalies.
He's
somewhere in the middle, and I think we've seen that middle ground in these first three games this year.
So... He's been not great.
He's been covering a lot tighter. He hasn't been getting burned as much.
Except for Sunday.
Well, a couple of plays. It wasn't that way the whole game, John. It really wasn't. And I went back and looked at some of his plays on film. He wasn't all that bad. And in the interceptions, he made good adjustments. He was reading. He wasn't letting the receiver get past him. He just needs to finish making those plays. That's what got him to the Pro Bowl. The frustrating thing is that he's now in position and he's not making the play. So at least he's made progress. Like last year, he was never in position. He was always 2 to 5 yards behind the receiver. Now he's with the receiver step for step. He's just not making the plays like he did in his rookie year. And that might be what we get out of him.
Yikes. I hope that's not necessarily
the case. I hope it changes. I hope I'm wrong. But
all right. Well, again, the story is that the NFL and the NFL Refs Association apparently making progress. We think a deal could be imminent, but nothing has been discussed beyond the fact that they discussed well into the wee hours of this morning. And I guess they're going back and forth on the final details, maybe dotting the I's, crossing the T's, so to speak. I would really feel like it'd be unlikely that the real refs, if you will, for lack of a better phrase, would be back this week, because I think they'd have to be on the field for tomorrow night's Thursday night game in order to make it fair for everybody. But then again, maybe that's part of the discussion. So we'll wait until we get an official announcement from the league.
Yeah.
That having been said, the other story today comes from the fact that Bill Belichick was fined $50,000 for grabbing the official trying to leave the field after the conclusion of the game on Sunday night, looking for an explanation as to whether or not the field goal by Justin Tucker was reviewable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that clearly the NFL considered it, looked at it on its merits, decided there probably was not anything really to be upset with, but the rules state you cannot touch an official. And just by the letter of the law, he had to be fined.
He did, which brings up the question of John Harbaugh, who also was seen making contact with an official, for which he was flagged.
But wasn't it still a different
he was trying
intent?
He was trying to get the ref's attention, just like Belichick was. He was trying to call timeout and wasn't being heard and tried to be heard, just like Belichick was trying to get an explanation, was trying to be heard. So by the letter of the law, shouldn't John Harbaugh be fined exactly the way Bill Belichick was?
Probably.
It looks like he might not be.
Well, he hasn't been fined yet.
No. And if the reports I'm seeing are true, he might not be.
Well, if that's the case, then so...
So is that,
What really differs here...
That's my question.
...in Belichick's grabbing of the official and what John Harbaugh did...
That's my
...trying
question.
To get an official's attention, which it appears that's all Belichick was trying to do.
Right. So that's what my question is. Is there a difference in...
Are we saying there's a double standard? Are we saying that maybe Belichick is being treated differently because he's had run-ins with the NFL before?
Well, but Kyle Shanahan was fined for not making contact with an official.
He just verbally abused
him. Abused him. John Fox was fined for inappropriately behaving but not touching. So I just want the NFL to be consistent is all.
Well, what are your thoughts on that? If Bill Belichick, and he has been, fined $50,000 for the referee incident this Sunday, what are your thoughts on John Harbaugh getting a free pass? Web radio at patriots.com, at jrook0722, the Twitter, john.rook on Facebook, and the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. All of that is coming up. Now, we have a couple of other issues that we do want to get to, but first and foremost, I want to get your thoughts as well on the practice today and who was out there, who wasn't out there, and we also had some roster moves.
Yeah, notable absentees, Logan Mankins and Julian Edelman, of course, hurt at the end of the first half after he caught that touchdown pass, left hand injury of some sort. Those two weren't out there, and you can add them to Aaron Hernandez, who remains... You know,
Edelman's been seen with a kind of a splint type thing on his
hand,
right?
Yeah, I mean, he was wrapped up at when he came back after the half in Baltimore, and he had both gloves on his hands, and it seemed to be taped, wrapped, cast something around the glove on his left hand. So it was a little bizarre that they would keep the glove on. Maybe they thought he could play with it, and I guess he tried to catch a few passes, but it wasn't really going to work. So, yeah, but more concerning to me is Mankins.
You think it's a setback?
Well, just...
By the way,
this is a guy who never misses practice or games.
And I loved his pluckiness out there, you know, defending the guys, if you will, when things got chippy on Sunday night.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He was right in the middle of it.
Stuck right
in
the middle of it.
Absolutely, and he always does.
Mm-hmm.
So, but for him to miss practice, it's so rare. I think he's only ever missed one other in his career. And or two maybe at the most, but that's disconcerting to me. Edelman, I think, has maybe a better chance of playing with whatever it is that's wrong with him. But we'll just
have to wait and see when
tomorrow.
The injury report comes out.
Yeah, and we'll see tomorrow.
Special or Mangan's concerned. Dedrick was out today.
Dedrick, rookie Justin Francis, and like I said, Hernandez. All three of them have ankle trouble.
Right. And then the roster addition was the Patriots, I guess, kind of swapped out a couple of defensive tackles. Marcus Forston was released, and they signed Terrell McClain.
Yeah, my guess is there'll be a practice squad move tomorrow if Forston clears waivers because they didn't just completely clear out his locker. They gave it to the new guy, McClain, but they moved all of the contents, including the nameplate of Forston, to Brian Waters' old spot. So that leads me to believe that if he clears waivers, he'll be back.
Practice squad.
Most likely. So they'd have to make a move tomorrow.
Okay. So potential.
So keep your eye on that.
Yeah.
So potential.
Potential move still to
and
come.
Forston just made his debut against Baltimore.
Right.
He played for the first time the other night. So guy that I'm sure that they like and would like to hold on to. I'm not sure why the move with this guy. Although we need to find out. There's something a little funny about this McClain because he was a rookie last year, a third-round pick.
With Carolina.
Started 12 games, John.
Right.
And then gets cut at the end of this training camp.
He was, I believe he was on IR last year with a sprained knee. with Carolina. He started 12 games, got put on IR, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so they gave up on him after the end of this year?
Either that, or they didn't like his work ethic, or maybe they didn't like his rehab, or I don't know. But, I mean, clearly he must be healthy enough for the Patriots to sign him.
I guess. But
I remember him at University of South Florida. Very active player.
Yeah.
And he was very good at getting penetration, which is what they're asking their defensive tackles.
You're right.
Not just the ends.
No, no.
But they're asking the tackles to collapse the pocket and push forward
sure.
now. That's why you see Love in there for one, because he's been excellent at it. And that's why they kept Brandon Dederick around, because he's been excellent at it in the past.
Yep.
And now Terrell McClain is the same type of player in the mold of those couple of guys. And even though he's not quite as big, he's only 300. I say only 300 pounds.
I know, right?
But he's got that kind of push that they're looking for out of tackles. At least that's what I saw of him in college.
Okay.
So there you go. So we'll get a look at him as well. And he was out there on the field today, correct? McClain was?
He was out there wearing number 93.
93. Yep. All right, so you can add that to your rosters, kids. All right, here you go, 508-298-0398 on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Email is webradio@patriots.com, @jrook0722, the Twitter, john.rook on Facebook. We're going to take a timeout, get to some of your emails. We've got other issues, including the Buffalo Bills, to talk about in the playbook.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for an offer that's going to make you and your family very excited. Now through September 30th, when you buy four select Bridgestone Tires at Sullivan Tire, you could receive a $70 American Express gift card or your very own Wii gaming system the whole family will love. See SullivanTire.com. Offer valid August 27th through September 30th, 2012. Mail-in claim form required. Cards issued by American Express Prepaid Card Management Corporation. Wii systems given away on behalf of Bridgestone America. Nintendo is not affiliated with this promotion. Certain limitations apply.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pat's tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
I love.
Love.
Love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epocher. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
My name name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Now is your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
In the playbook with Patriots Football Weekly's Eric Scalavino. We want to hear from you. Webradio at patriots.com. 508-298-0398 at jrook0722 Twitter. John.Rook on Facebook. Really, our question of the day is kind of a multi-purposed one, but number one, how long is it going to take you to get upset with the real officials if indeed they are going to be back soon, as we're getting from several media reports this afternoon? That's number one. And number two, really, let's kind of play off of the other issue. The other news of the day here has to do with Bill Belichick being fined $50,000 by the NFL. Is it right that he's fined and John Harbaugh isn't? What are your thoughts? Send us your thoughts. A couple of emails here. Let's start with SP, who said, this is Sean from New Hampshire, the earlier caller that we had from Portland, who said, talking about Devin McCourty. He says, Devin McCourty sucks. He's not Ty Law or Otis Smith. Until we get a friggin' corner that can play for 60 minutes, we won't win any more Super Bowls. Harsh.
A little bit, considering that they almost won one last year.
Yeah.
They came.
Keep in mind, once again,
close to
statistically, they had the next to last defense in the NFL,
yeah,
statistically, and damn near, and probably should have won the Super Bowl anyway.
Yeah.
So that,
there goes that.
If that doesn't tell you how the game is morphing, I don't know what else to tell you here.
Real quick on the BB fine.
Go.
Our friend Shalice Manza-Young from the Boston Globe,
yes,
just did a little number crunching and said, you know, with Bill's reported salary of $7.5 million, mm-hmm, per year, $50,000 constitutes less than 1% of his salary, which is like, she makes the analogy, a person making $60,000 a year being fined $402.
Well, that was
it's not exactly a major hit to his pocketbook.
No, it's
obviously
pocket change,
but it's the double standard thing.
It's a double standard.
The inconsistency.
Which is why we asked the question. It's why we asked the question. You brought up a very good point. And I think it's worth asking, you know, our listeners how they feel about it. Now, I can imagine that there will be a lot of people who will be upset just because they're Patriots fans. But at the same time,
step back and look at it from a non
non-biased
perspective. Just from a, you know, take out the names and just say,
right,
X coach did this, Y coach did that, X coach is getting
fined,
Y
coach is not getting fined.
Yeah.
For instance, Kyle sends this. He says, F the NFL for finding Belichick completely ridiculous. Okay, that's one. And then the other side of that is, let me see if I can
quick question to that person, though.
Yes.
Would he feel better about it if Harbaugh had been fined as well?
That's a fair question. That's a fair question.
And keep in mind, like I said, Kyle Shanahan, John Fox, and who's the other? There was another one, right, whose name is escaping me, another coach who was... Wasn't there another coach who was
I don't think
involved?
So.
No? Or is it just those?
I think it's just those three.
Okay.
You had Fox, Shanahan,
Belichick, and Harbaugh.
And Harbaugh.
Okay, all right. Okay, yeah. I thought there might have been another one in there. But those three of the four have been fined.
Right. Okay.
So far.
Three of the four. Why not Harbaugh?
Why not Harbaugh?
Why not Harbaugh? I think that's what we have to kind of we have to kind of look at here. Conversations earlier as well, talking about the extending of the goalposts so we can fix a problem potentially of field goal attempts and kicks or extra points that go over the goalpost as opposed to the crossbar, which is what I personally believe they should be. But the rule book states as long as it goes over the goalpost, it's still a good kick.
I think that's absurd. Because what other sport is, I mean, what's the rule like in other sports?
Well, for instance, in basketball, the ball's got to go through the hoop, okay? It's got to go through the hoop.
Sure.
If it doesn't go through the hoop, it's not a not a basket.
And if it hits the rim, it tends to bounce out.
And there's also, tends to bounce
tends
out.
To sometimes correct. It bounces
in,
up.
In baseball, you got to touch home plate to score a run.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty
definitive.
You can't
jump over it.
You can't go over it.
Right.
You can't skirt it. You got to touch it. All right? So that's another one I guess you could make an analogy of. What about hockey? The puck's got to go in the net.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's got to cross the line and go into the net, right?
Right.
Can't go around it, can't go by it, can't go over it. Got to go in it.
Yeah, I just don't see how a ball going through an invisible post is good. Because if the post were there, it would either be clanging out or maybe possibly clanging
and
in.
And so we've had some suggestions that, well, you'd maybe raise it a few more feet or what have you. I personally believe, you know.
I just think you, oh, I'm sorry, you go ahead.
No, I personally believe you got to put an imaginary box around it, that if it's going to go over the crossbar, no matter how high up it is, I think that's fine. But once you start talking about the goalposts themselves, the two bars that are going upright, now you're beginning to get into a gray area. James writes an email here. He says, Adam Carolla has been saying for years he would put lasers in the post himself. Not worried about the Pats. I feel really bad for the Bills. That's all I know. Here's another one. John in South Carolina, put a motion sensor on the top of each pole. If the sensor is broken, it's good. Or in this case, I think if the sensor is broken, it should be no good. Because that way you create the box.
Yeah.
Except for going straight up.
I just think if
But in that case, it's still going over the crossbar.
If the ball were going to strike the upright, I'd say chances are it's not going to be a good kick. Chances are when a kicker hits an upright, most of the time, it's no good. It bounces away. So I think you go with the percentages and say if it's...
Now, you're a kicker. You were a kicker, okay? You played college football. So here's the thing. If you're aiming, what are you aiming for? You're not aiming for the upright, are you?
Hell no. You're aiming for the dead center of the goalpost.
So...
Of the crossbar.
If the ball goes over the upright...
What I was aiming... I always
you screwed
aimed,
up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely you screwed up. And in my mind, the percentages say that when you hit the hit the upright, chances are it's going to be a miss. So if it hits the invisible part of the, you know, extended upright, it should be considered no good. I don't know why the league says that a kick of that sort is good. Makes absolutely no sense to me. It should be no good. Because more often than not, it isn't when it hits the bar or it hits the goalpost.
And then you've got, you know, and the worst part about this is, though, is that going over the goalpost, not the crossbar, the goalpost, isn't reviewable.
Absolutely asinine. Makes no sense.
Why would that not be reviewable?
Of all the ones that should be
reviewable. That's the one that should be reviewable.
Exactly. Exactly. And if you put little cameras, mount them on the very top of the goalposts.
Mm-hmm. Like I suggested.
When the ball is coming towards it, you can see because they're pointing straight
on.
Is
it going to the right or the left? Is it going to the right or the camera? That's exactly right.
And depending on which post you're looking at, that determines whether it's good or not.
Correct. There's an easy way to fix this problem. There really is. This is almost a no-brainer, and it wouldn't take much money to get the problem fixed. But if we've got the technology and we're using it in other areas of the game, why the hell aren't we using it here?
I don't know. It's so frustrating, isn't it?
It defies logic almost. And I understand, before you go off on it here, I understand you can't over-regulate everything. I get that. I do get that. In fact, here's Frank sends this note on email.
You just want to get it right is
yes.
all.
Frank says, really, this is football. Stop trying to make it perfect. It's not possible, and it shouldn't be. The drama effect of human error is there in all sports and needed. I'm embarrassed for all of you. Let's put chips in the receivers. Gloves, how about the cleats? Well, let's put them all on those ridiculous costumes used when making video games so everything's recorded. Wait, that could fix the officiating problem. It's actually funny. But I get his point. It seems like we're trying to over-regulate and over-officiate and overrule everything to make it perfect when we know this is an imperfect game and imperfect science, and humans are imperfect. So why are we trying to perfect something that's imperfect?
Well, see, I just have a different mindset on life in general. 'Cause my idea every day is to wake up and be perfect. I don't know. I'm serious. That's my goal.
Spoken like a true football player.
I swear to God, John, my goal in life is to be perfect. Now, I know that as a human being, we are fallible. We make mistakes. We're bound to. No matter how hard we try, sometimes forces go against us. The goal should always be to try to be perfect. Why just give up and resign and say, the hell with it. I'm not perfect. I'm just going to screw up all the time and blame it on that. No. Make the damn effort. Try. And that's all we're trying to do here, is to try to make it as perfect as possible. I don't see anything wrong with that.
I have to admit, I pause here because I'm kind of torn. I tend to agree with you, but there is a part of me that kind of agrees with Frank. We're really trying to perfect something that really is just not perfectible. And so in that regard, I have always been a proponent of not having instant replay, because I agree with Frank. I actually think that that's what is, you know, hey, these games that we play, okay, as fans, as professionals, as amateurs, however you play them, these games that we play, we've grown up through the years without the ability to make a judgment, you know, thanks to electronics or technical advances. We've used our own eyesight. Mm-hmm. And we've used our own gut instinct, and we've used our own knowledge, and it's been good for, I'd say well over 100 years. So if it's good, and it has been good, and the sports have grown to the nth degree that they have, why all of a sudden do we have to let technology get in the way and screw it up? There's a part of me that says, I don't think we need any more replay. I agree. If we have some technology, it's good because it can help you correct egregious errors, but the most egregious errors, as it seems to me, are really the ones that are left stood. For instance, Monday night, that was an egregious error, but the NFL was not going to overturn it. How about when the guy Joyce, the baseball official, ruined Galarraga's perfect game?
Two years ago?
And it was an egregious error.
Absolutely was.
But baseball, the decision stood, even though they could have said, you blew that call. We really need to change that. The problem is that the ones that really need changing are the ones that are left agone. Why? Left alone. Because they don't want to harm the overall integrity of the game. And I would argue that leaving them alone does exactly that.
Exactly. You're right. You're right. It's like letting an innocent man sit in jail when you know that there's exculpatory evidence.
And why are you letting him sit in jail? Because our legal system sucks? Well, right. We all know that it does.
Yeah, you don't want the integrity of the justice system. No.
Right.
You're screwing the poor innocent guy.
Well, that's exactly right. So we're so caught up in this country, whether it's the justice system or politics or sports that mm-hmm. we're talking about here, we're so caught up in protecting the integrity, and I've got quotes around phrase, yep. right? But protecting the integrity of our sport that, we're just going to let the bad thing stand. Well, that's crap.
No.
Let's fix the problem. And if we need a little technology, I don't want to completely turn it over to robots and computers. I'm definitely not into that. Because the game was created by humans. The game ought to be officiated by humans. But we can use some things to keep us from making the really stupid, egregious errors like we saw on Monday night and like we had happened in baseball a couple of years ago. And we should be using technology for that, and we're not.
I see if you agree with this, too. I think the rule book needs to be streamlined.
No question.
Cut down.
There
need to be fewer rules and regulations than there currently are. Way fewer. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. 110%. We need to streamline a lot of things in our life.
Because you can tell.
If technology would make that easier, okay, then I'm for bringing technology.
Because you bring up the whole human element.
Right.
With, you know, seeing things that with our own two eyes and making the judgment call. Can't you tell with your own two eyes whether or not a guy did something he shouldn't have? Like the hit.
Most of the time
you
yes.
can, right?
Most of the time I would say that your eyes do not deceive you.
Right. Like the hit that Matt Schaub took this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
not a good thing.
No, it really wasn't. I thought his head came off.
I thought he got concussed the way he went right
forward. Did you hear part of his ear came off?
Oh, I saw it. They showed a close-up of it.
Holy
crap. It was gross, yeah. I mean, it wasn't like Evander Holyfield gross, but it was still
pretty gross.
But, you know, like the hit that Ed Reed leveled on Edelman in the first half in the end zone.
Yeah.
That should have been a flag. That's a bad. I mean, if you're going to go for a guy's head, you should be penalized. But that's the kind of thing where it should be up to your... That's where I think that the human element comes in with the officials. They shouldn't have to have all these rules and regulations of, was it a forearm? Was it in this area up here? Just use your own two eyes. Was it too rough? Was it you know, beyond acceptable limits?
Should we also, though, let the officials have the leeway?
Yes.
To say,
yes.
Depending upon the personality, or do the officials have to follow a certain stringent, you know, rule that, okay, that's a foul and that's not?
Like I said, I think this is the part where you say,
I mean, there might be some officials,
did that cross a line?
There might be some officials out there like Ed Hockley who are, you know, built and like thinking, you know, hey, that wasn't a hard hit. Get up, you.
Part of the training, I think, is you show, you wimp. No, but I think part of the training is you show those types of hits and say, the consensus is, the majority opinion is, this crosses a line.
That crosses the line.
So if you see that, regardless of what you think.
You lead with the head.
You call the helmet,
helmet-to-helmet contact. Okay, that's crossed the line.
Or you gather as a group and you discuss it and you say, just get the call right.
Right, okay.
You know?
All right, that makes sense to me. Let me get a couple of tweets here. Steve says, Harbaugh wasn't fine because TV didn't display it and discuss it to death. Quote, fans didn't see it. It didn't happen.
That's like wrestling, right? Isn't that the rule in the professional wrestling?
Kind of.
If it wasn't on television, it didn't happen.
Or if the referee doesn't see the guy coming from behind.
Exactly.
And, you know, yeah, okay. You know what? There's probably some truth to that. Sad to say, but there's probably some truth to that. Because it wasn't brought up ad nauseum by ESPN and some of the others there, then it probably didn't get a lot of play. Frank says on Twitter, he says, Harbaugh draws the defensive foul, F-O-W-L. Okay.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, a little play on words. Let's get to some of the Facebook posts. Tim on Facebook says, let's see. I'll be happy when the real officials are back, that I agree 100% with Eric. He says, Satan, pull on your skates, regarding them being full-time. You're shaking
Very
your head.
Very funny, yeah.
Okay. We have the best football players and coaches available in the world. I expect games to be reffed by the best officials. The best product available is what I expect from a billion-dollar business with minimal mistakes. Eradicating them completely is impossible. The last time Bill was punished by the league, he went on a take-no-prisoners tear. Let's hope for the same. And by the way, he said a couple of other ones here. He says Del Rio was fined along with Fox in Denver.
Okay, so
so I guess he was. So that makes Harbaugh the only one that wasn't. If that's
where's
the case.
Del Rio now?
Where's Jack Del Rio? He's a coordinator for somebody.
Yeah, coordinator for the Broncos.
Okay. And then he says they can review shots in tennis using a virtual system with no human decision involved, and it takes a matter of seconds.
The
tracer technology.
Yeah, what are they? I forgot what they called it. They were using all this summer, though.
Right.
Yeah.
He says, I don't believe for a second they can't incorporate that into field goal attempts.
Sure.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that probably makes some sense, huh?
Absolutely does. I always wondered how quickly they were able to turn that around on the tennis and get it just. I mean, how do they do that? Do they have like a chip in the tennis ball or something? How does that work? Have you seen it?
I don't know. I think it's some kind of a laser something or other system that allows that to happen.
And
I don't know.
And it's instant.
Maybe it is a
chip. As soon as the player calls for the challenge, they go. It's right there.
Yeah, maybe it is a chip. Alvin chimes in.
It's great, though.
Alvin chimes in from McAllen, Texas, by the way. He says, I saw the field goal. It wasn't good. I can't believe there's no review. But he said, to be honest, Brady needed one more first down anyway. So I can certainly, I think.
They needed one more first down. Arrington needed to make the interception. I mean,
so did McCourty earlier in the game.
Well, but I mean, on that last drive specifically, they could have ended. That would have ended it. When I saw him tripping over his own 2 feet, I knew that was it. It was over.
All right. Well, before we lose sight of the time here, we really haven't started talking about Buffalo yet. I will get those of you who have sent us emails and tweets and Facebook posts. I'm going to get to them. Got the second hour of the program. And by the way, Mark Kelso, who is the radio analyst on the Buffalo Bills radio network and a former Bills defensive back. He will join us in the playbook toward the bottom of the next hour of the program. So we will start talking Bills with Mark Kelso coming up in approximately 30 minutes from now. In the meantime, your thoughts then on Buffalo. This team is 1-2, losing record for the first time in 9 seasons. It's really the first time since 01 this deep into a season that they've had a losing record this far into the year.
Yep.
3 weeks in. So we're talking 11 seasons where that's concerned at 1-2. Fact of the matter is, because this is a divisional game against an opponent that before the season began, we perceived as being the Patriots' threat in the AFC East.
Mm-hmm.
That makes this one very, very big in my eyes.
Sure, it does. Absolutely. And the fact that Fred Jackson, who's on his way back from a knee injury, and he practiced today in Buffalo. We'll find out exactly how much in about an hour, but he was out there on the field today, which is good news for them.
I even saw a report yesterday that said C.J. Spiller said he was going to try to suit. It just depended upon how much pain he could take.
Right. So, yeah, they have some playmakers there. Stevie Johnson is no joke. I mean, he's a good receiver. They have good tight end. They have good running backs, so even a banged-up running back crew, I think that, I mean, you know, Fred Jackson has hurt them in the past. I think it comes down to Fitzgerald, though, because if he's his inconsistent self, then that helps the Patriots. But I think I can't see New England going in and losing 3 straight. I really do think that the 2 losses, very close losses.
2002 was the last time they lost three straight.
They lost four straight
that year,
yeah.
Right.
In the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to take it out on Buffalo this weekend. I do.
So you think it's turned around?
I do.
Okay.
I feel good. I mean, I do feel good about this game, even though...
Already feel good about it.
I already feel good about it, even though it's on the road, even though it's against a good opponent in the division. I just don't want to be Buffalo this week. I don't.
You think the steel blinders have been put on?
Yeah.
Outside?
Yeah, I do. They lost by 1 point to a team they should have beaten probably on the road. They played very well. They put 30 points up against that Ravens defense.
That's true. That is one way to look at it.
You know?
And they certainly could have put up more if they hadn't shot themselves in the foot late in the game.
Their best offensive output of the season. I know they scored 34 at Tennessee, but remember, 7 of those were on defense.
Correct.
So their highest offensive output was against the best defense they've faced so far this year. Yes, they couldn't close it out at the end, but a lot of other things went wrong, too. I do feel very good. I know Buffalo's defense is a little bit better than they were last year, but I don't think they're as good as Baltimore's was. And I think New England's defense will handle the banged-up running. They've been fairly good against the run this year, and I think that'll continue. I'm not going to give you my score prediction yet because that's for tomorrow.
Yeah, that's for tomorrow.
But I'm just getting a good feeling already about it.
All right.
I don't see 3 losses in a row.
I want you to hang on for just an extra minute or two.
Okay.
Because here's Kat in Chicago. Kat, you're in the playbook.
Hey, girl.
Hi, John. How you doing, Eric? How
good.
Done?
Hey, by the way, the homemade, what do you call them?
Caramel corn?
The Cracker Jack things. The homemade ones you made were delicious.
Yeah, the stuff that I missed out on, Kat.
Yeah. Oh, my God, those were good.
I'll send you some or bring you some.
You're the best.
Those were so good.
And they
didn't last long. They didn't last till the next day. That's why John didn't get any.
Nothing lasts long with these guys in here. She's got to know that now. Nothing lasts long. What's on your mind today, Kat?
Well, you know, I have to say that whole argument of you shouldn't do too much technology. We shouldn't be trying to fix these problems because it hurts the integrity of the game really, really pisses me off. That email that you got, I could not disagree more. I think the integrity of the game is that you've got guys out there working as a team, working hard for 4 quarters. They're putting their all into it. And when you get to the end of the game and there's a field goal that no one can tell one way or the other definitively if it's good or bad, that is a travesty and it totally negates their effort.
Absolutely.
And that's not right. You know, if you're talking about the integrity of the game, how about the players and the work that they put out there and the coaches and all of that? It's absolutely absurd to say that any of those improvements in terms of the goalposts and all of that stuff, or even adding more replay or any of that, would hurt football.
I'm with you 100%.
That's a ridiculous argument. And secondly, I'll say to that guy, I guess that, you know, he should never have surgery or take prescriptions.
Right.
Or, I mean, modern medicine, boy, you better just go on back. Go, you know.
Right, because we're not perfect. Yeah, we're imperfect, so yeah, just give up. Just give up now.
Rub some dirt on it and move on.
Yeah.
Right.
Just go, you know what, go dig the grave now and just lie in it, because that's, you know what, why bother? Why bother with anything else?
Yeah, if you're a fan of random chance, go play roulette.
Mm-hmm.
If you like human error, I don't know, do something like become a politician or do something like that, and you'll get your fill. Don't watch football. Leave football to the rest of us who are real fans and want to see the calls made that support what actually happens on the field.
Yeah!
Atta girl.
Yeah!
I like it. I do too.
There we go. I was teamed up.
Okay, I'm listen. See, but that's why I'm glad you decided to share
we
that
like
with
it.
Us, because we like the passion.
We like it when you get all riled
we
up.
We like the passion. That's exactly right. So,
go ahead. I wanted to say, everybody, you know, I listened to the previous show too, and people are really down on Devin McCourty. I thought that game was the best Devin McCourty has played since his rookie season.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Kat, I look at every inch of film on Mondays now, and he's playing a lot better. He's covering tighter. He's keeping the receiver in front of him, not getting burnt nearly as badly. He had a couple of bad plays, obviously, against the Ravens. Everybody does, but he was fine.
He managed to get in front between a receiver and the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Torrey Smith on a couple of plays.
Yeah.
That's something we haven't – and everybody's, we dropped two interceptions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when has he been in the position to make interceptions
right. The
past year?
Yeah.
He has even been close. The fact that he was even there and could do that tells me that he's playing better. So
he is.
Get off his back and let's wait and see. If he goes – if he reverts back, if this is his only good game of the season – you've got.
No, he had a great game. He had a great game against Tennessee. He played very well against Tennessee. He had a decent game last week the week before, I should say, against Fitzgerald for most of the time. He's like I said to John earlier in the show, Kat, he's not the extreme that he was in his rookie year, nor is he the extreme that he was last year. He's somewhere in between, and that's what we've seen in these first three games. And in between, he's getting close and making himself be in position to make plays. He's just not making the plays,
which is
a balance between those two seasons.
How much different would either one of you feel if you'd been able to come up with those picks?
I still think that those will balance themselves out. There'll be games when he does make the play, but there will be just as many games when he doesn't. So I think that's where you get the balance between his rookie year and last year.
He's showing, the difference between catching the interception and knocking it away, a lot of that's confidence, I think, and a lot of that's a little bit of, like, technical tweaking and stuff like that. If he's in the position to be doing that, then I got to feel a lot better about him than I have in the past.
Yep.
Obviously, if he makes it, I would feel better, but I mean, I'm not sure it would be. I feel a lot better him this week than I did the week before.
Yeah.
And hopefully, if he keeps improving, we might get something, maybe not like a high-end, corner, but maybe, at least a starter back.
That'd be great.
Sure.
Especially since we took the guy in the first round.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Got to get that kind of production out of him. Kat, the question of the day was, how long is it going to be until you get PO'd at the real refs when they're back?
I think it's going to take me till the playoffs. I'm going to be so happy.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You may win for length of time here.
I've been so pissed off that some of the calls have been horrible. I really think that, to me personally, I think that both of these losses, I have huge question marks. I can't get too down on the team. I mean, they're, tackle is still a problem, which really hurts me, but Danny Woodhead touchdown in the first game, the Cardinals, there was no hold on that. I went back and looked at it again and again. You can't – if they called a hold on that, there should have been 50 other holding calls in that game. There was no consistency at all on that. and I just didn't see it. So to me, you know, I don't know. It's stuff like that and the inconsistency, the stuff that they weren't calling. The Indianapolis game, I don't know if you guys saw any of that, but on their last drive, where they should have gotten every single pass that Luck threw should have had a defensive holding or pass interference call. Pass interference, not holding. Against
Jacksonville?
Yeah, it was horrible. It was really horrible. I mean, they were knocking receivers down. There's no reason that any of that should be happening. And so, I mean, just for those reasons, I'll be glad for a long time to have the normal guys back.
Fair enough. So when do we get to see you again around these parts?
I think I'm coming. My husband and I are going to come for Thanksgiving, I think.
Nice.
So I'll let you know and...
Well, he's welcome to come hang out with you, but we'd rather see you by yourself.
Well, I know that I know that Andy and Paul and Fred were interested in meeting him. I think that they have some sort of an idea that he's like a gangster, mobster guy.
Can we call him Mr. Cat?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, we appreciate it. Thanks for giving us a buzz and checking in, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Thanks for the great show.
Thank you,
Kat. Take care, Kat.
Kat in Chicago. All right, good stuff. Let's get a break in here. Big E, we'll see you tomorrow.
You will.
Back here in the playbook. We'll take the time out, come back to your emails, your posts, your tweets, your phone calls, and Mark Kelso in the playbook coming up.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pat's tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
I love.
Love.
Love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, D-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
This is Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio. Want to get inside the playbook? Call John on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
We're back in the playbook. It's hour number two here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. You can reach us on the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. The email address, webradio@patriots.com, Twitter, @jrook0722, and Facebook, john.rook. Now, let us get a couple of tweets in here. Frank sends this about Kat, who just called in. She said, is she sure they are not perfect? It happens because they want to be perfect. It's all a ridiculous but fun argument. Talking about trying to not to use too much, I guess, technology in terms of officiating football games. You know, that really is sort of the, as we were talking about in the opening hour of the program, it really is kind of ridiculous when you think about it. I mean, we have been able to get this far, but then how do we make the game better? And really, I understand the thought process of not wanting to mess with a good thing. It was good for my grandpa. It's good for me. You know, that kind of thing. Okay, I get that. Don't want to mess with a good thing. You don't want to reinvent the wheel, yada, yada. But at the same time, if you have technology, I mean, how do we advance as a society if you don't use technology? If you don't develop new and different and maybe more efficient ways of spinning a wheel, for lack of a better phrase, you know? So in that regard, we have this technology, and yet we're not putting it to use where it really needs to be used. And that's the thing that really kind of bothers me the most about this. I think it's just, it's all in the application of, and it's just incorrect applications of is what I think it kind of boils down to. Mark Kelso, who is the color analyst on the Buffalo Bills radio network, he will join us in 20 minutes here inside the playbook. So we will get into the Buffalo Bills issues. Fred Jackson's looking like he's going to step in for C.J. Spiller at running back this week. The entire issue over Ryan Fitzpatrick, all these things. So we'll get the latest on everything that is the Buffalo Bills coming up in just a little bit. In the meantime, I want to get back to some of the other things that we've been talking about in the opening hour because you have been kind enough to send your thoughts and also your questions via email and also on Facebook. Axel sends this on Facebook. He says, number one, hi, John, Eric, Kevin in the booth. I have three questions today. Number one, I might be wrong, but I cannot remember Dante Hightower blitzing a single time over these three games. I'm wondering why. He possesses a great mix between size, speed, and strength. I feel that if he got one-on-one against a running back, he'd win 9 out of 10 times. Send him straight up the A-gap, allow him to destroy a quarterback. You know, I think that's a legitimate question, Axel. I'm kind of curious myself as to why that may be. My only guess is that they have thought that in these games that they have played thus far, it's probably more of an issue of contain than it is to blitz. We haven't seen a lot of blitz, and they want to see the front four collapse the pocket and put the pressure on the opposing quarterback. They could have used a nice little, you know, twist against Joe Flacco on Sunday night. I certainly will go along with you there on that one. I think this bears watching. I think that's a good question to ask Matt Patricia. Hopefully we'll get that question asked of him because he does speak to the media usually on Tuesdays. Number two, Axel says, why is Alfonso Dennard, I should say, inactive? Is it injury-related, or is the game day roster spot needed somewhere else? I think largely it's needed somewhere else. I believe he's a healthy scratch. You know, Dennard is a guy that, frankly, barely made the roster anyway because he did spend a lot of the preseason hurt. But they like his potential to the point where they did not want to cut him, feeling like he would have been picked up. So that's why he was able to get through, you know, at least waivers and put on the practice, or, you know, he would not have been able to be a practice squad player, so he made the team. So there you go. It will probably change if we get injuries. Rest assured. Number three, what is Ed Reed's punishment for trying to kill Branch? A Bronco got suspended for pushing and maybe stepping on Schaub. I hope that Reed gets about the same punishment. Well, here's the thing. Both, as you saw, Reed and Branch, after the hit, got up and slapped five and kind of patted each other on the shoulders and said, good play. So I don't believe in Dion's mind that he thought Reed was trying to kill him. And so in that particular instance, I think, well, as Patriots fans, we all said, okay, good call by the official, because it certainly did appear that Ed Reed led with his head, and he caught Dion under the chin on that particular hit that you're talking about, Axel. I'm kind of guessing that, you know, short of a fine, you probably won't see anything else. Fine hasn't been announced, I don't believe, yet on that. I'd be interested to see if it will be. He says, I'll be watching the Pats destroy the Bills this weekend, and I will do it while reading curse words and asking Fred my standard questions. How is Dowling looking? Okay. Thank you, Axel. Appreciate that. By the way, if you haven't had a chance to join Fred Kirsch for curse words during a Patriots broadcast, you should. It's available right here on Patriots.com. And if you're online and you're outside the area and for whatever reason you can't get the game on television and you're forced to listen to it on the net or follow along with Game Tracker or whatever, it's really kind of cool. Fred is, it's a live blog that he's got going with up to, gosh, 1,000 fans at once. I think he's had between 1,000 and 2,000 fans on at any single time, a couple of times already this year, and it's actually kind of fun. And Fred is a funny guy, as I know many of you are aware, and it's kind of cool to see him go through that. So that's right here on Patriots.com. Curse words are his live blog during Patriots games whenever the Pats are playing. Michael says, let's see what we have here. Oh, four. Okay, gosh. Here we are today. Yeah, he sent in a bunch of them. Thank you, Michael, for the Facebook input today. He says, for today's question, there will be issues and complaints about the regular officials the first week they get back. Players, coaches, and fans are going to complain right away, and then the talk shows will say that the regular officials have been away from the game too long and have not learned and adjusted to rules. Then there will also be complaints that they're making the wrong calls and missing calls. Yeah. That's probably going to start right away, which is kind of why I asked the question. We, Eric and I thought it was funny, because we all know that people love to gripe and complain. But at the same time, I think it's legitimate, because you know that it's back to business as usual when you're complaining about the officials. Well, we're complaining about the fake refs. Now we're going to start complaining about the real refs. How long is it going to take for you to start complaining? My whole point is I don't think it'll take any of us very long at all to start complaining. Michael says, for my regular question for your discussion regards the run game of the Patriots, I understand that Woodhead has a special role and he did contribute well in the past. I also understand that the league has shifted away from powerful backs, guys like Jerome Bettis, but do you think the Patriots would have more success when they need to get yards if they had a bigger, more powerful running back? Well, yes and no, because first of all, you got to have the holes for the back to get through. Second of all, yeah, it certainly helps if you've got a load to have to tackle. There's no question. But I understand, I'm kind of curious as to why in this particular instance we don't see more of a guy like Brandon Bolden, who, while he's not a huge guy, he certainly seems to be a more compact, powerful, straight-ahead type of runner than what we've seen with the other guys, with Ridley and Vereen. So, and then again, Shane Vereen has been MIA anyway, and that's a whole other issue to begin with. The one thing that I really liked about Stephen Ridley is the fact that he hits a hole so incredibly fast. And he's usually a straight-ahead guy. He doesn't dance or dart or, you know, sidestep. He just, bang, he's right there like he's shot out of a gun. And, you know, again, it's all about blocking, and you got to be able to hold those blocks long enough for a guy like that to hit the hole. And so if you're not going to use Ridley, then why wouldn't you use a guy with a little bit more size involved? And to me, I thought that was one of the reasons why they kept Bolden. Anyway, Michael says, for the $50,000 fine, it is excessive. It is twice the level assessed on Kyle Shanahan, and it's significantly more than the fine on John Fox. Bill wanted an explanation. It doesn't appear that he verbally abused an official, contrary to the assertion that the contact by Coach Harbaugh with an official was incidental and or accidental. It was intentional. That contact should also be fined. I'd like to hear the reason by the NFL why the fines are different for various situations, even if the league wants to doublespeak. I kind of join in there with you, Michael. I think we're all kind of waiting to hear, all right, so why all of a sudden now is Bill Belichick being fined when, in effect, that's what John Harbaugh did, even though it wasn't seen quite as much as it was by, you know, certainly the nation. When we saw Bill Belichick grabbing for the official after the field goal was ruled good and the officiating crew was running off of the field Sunday night. That was there for everyone to see. We didn't necessarily see, at least I didn't see Harbaugh grab the official trying to call a timeout. I didn't see it. And I'm sure there are many of you that also did not see it. And I'm wondering if maybe it just wasn't even brought up sometimes to the attention of the NFL on this one. But if he touched the guy, and the rule is you can't touch the guy, why wasn't he fined? A rule should be a rule. And there is a double standard, and that's part of the problem we have with the officiating and the use of electronics and lasers and instant replay and yada yada. I mean, when is the rule the rule? We don't know. So why can't we stand by the letter of the law? There's just way too much inconsistency involved in the game overall. We got to be on the same page. You really want to fix problems? Just start with consistency. That's really all we need to do, is just start with some consistency. I want to read a couple of emails here because speaking of consistency. John in Alaska sent this in the last hour. He says, John, I strongly disagree with your view. The problem with the replacements is no consistency. At least the originals were very consistent. These guys have not been, and this last week was the biggest example of that. Are the originals perfect? No, but dang it, there was far more consistency. You know, okay, I understand that. I actually thought the replacement officials in the opening week did a pretty good job with some consistent calls, and it has degraded itself every week. It was a little worse in week two. It was certainly worse in week three. It's gotten worse. That's all. I think it's just kind of gotten worse. We must be popular in Alaska today because Robin in Alaska chimes in as well. I'm not a lawyer or a constitution expert, but saying work for us full-time and no other jobs allowed reeks of all sorts of wrong. In addition to some of our questions today in the opening hour, we were talking about whether or not the officials should officially be made full-time NFL employees. Full-time military personnel can hold other jobs. Full-time athletes can hold other jobs. That's Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders. Full-time or not, and I favor the accountability that comes with that full-time designation, refs have the right and should be awarded the liberty to pursue employment per their ability. Okay? Fair enough. That's a legitimate question. But I would tell you that, you know, they're not considered full-time, whether they are or not. They're not considered in the NFL, whereas in the other three major sports in this country, the officials are considered full-time employees. Now, I don't think that means that they can't go out and do other part-time gigs, but the demands of their job are such that they really don't have time to go out and get other gigs. And if they're compensated well enough, Robin, I can't imagine that there would be enough time for them to go out and get other gigs either. So let's see how this plays out, right? Let's see how it plays out. Daryl sends this message. Oh, we got a statement from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick just in concerning his fine. And the quote is from Coach Bill. It was inappropriate for me to contact the official. I take responsibility for what happened. I accept the discipline, and I apologize for the incident Sunday night in Baltimore. End quote. So that's the official statement from Coach Belichick and the official statement from the Patriots on the $50,000 fine leveled levied and leveled to the coach by the National Football League for his contact with the official Sunday night after the loss to Baltimore. Once again, quote, "It was inappropriate for me to contact the official. I take responsibility for what happened. I accept the discipline, and I apologize for the incident Sunday night in Baltimore." End of quote. And I assume that'll be the end that we hear of that from the coach, even though I'm sure somebody will ask him about it tomorrow. Daryl sends this on Facebook. Hey, John, yes.
Real quickly,
yeah.
Before we move on from the statement, he was asked a little bit about that today.
Okay.
Would you like to hear a little bit of it?
Yes, do you have that?
Yeah, I can get it for you here.
All right. All right, I'll give Kevin a minute here.
Part of our preparation and adjustment. I don't think it's anything that's foreign to us.
Next question here.
Okay.
Bill, you're real strict with your rules regarding your players, and if guys violate those rules, you have consequences. Would you be surprised because of the rule that you can't contact a ref if you were fined sometime today or in the future?
Yeah, I already commented on that the other day, and I don't have anything to add to it. So whatever the league decides to do, I'll respect and just keep trying to do my job.
Have you had any contact at all with the league about this situation? Was there
any more to add to it? No more.
We can let it stop there, but just so he didn't have anything to add right before, but now this is all we get coming out of it.
Yeah.
We get a sentence, so that's more better than nothing.
Well, you're right. That's actually more than what we usually get. Thanks, Kev, for that. Daryl says, John, how long will it take for me to get miffed at the real officials? Probably one game. How long will it take for me to forgive them? Probably one play. Will I ever want the replacements back? Well, does a Puffett ever really want some dude's hand shoved up his butt? Cheers, mate. He says, the big difference is how egregious the errors are. The regular refs won't be making many, if at all, and they won't be nearly as frequent or damning. The other problem with the replacements is their entire lack of confidence in either themselves or their calls. Good point by that one, Daryl. Good point. Brian says, I'm extremely happy with the refs coming back, much more so than all the controversial calls. I couldn't stand the way the replacement refs slowed games down. That was also another issue, by the way. As long as games resume their normal, brisker pace, I'll be thrilled. Interesting comments. Thank you for sharing on the Facebook page at john.rook. You may do so if you would like to do that. Ace Ticket Hotline is open at 508-298-0398. The Twitter line, at jrook0722. And, of course, the email address, webradio@patriots.com. Let me get a couple of extra emails here. And this one comes from Jack. It says, guys, Jack Del Rio is the other guy, I think. Yes. Thank you very much. Okay. We did figure that out. That was the other guy who was fined amongst the coaches for this last weekend by the league. Abe sends this. We're talking about the cameras being placed on the goalpost somehow to get a clearer picture of whether or not it's a make or a miss. And Abe says, what if the ball hits the camera? What happens? Well, I would say that the camera, if a camera was ever installed, a camera would have to be considered part of the goalpost. Just like an official is considered part of the playing field, if the ball hits an official, then it hits the field, and it's a dead ball or an incomplete pass. An official's part of the field, the camera has to be part of the goalpost if they install cameras to begin with. But my whole argument in the opening hour of the program today was, let's just do away with the goalpost entirely. It's got to go inside the goalpost. You can put sensors on top of that thing, motion detectors. I think John in South Carolina, he emailed that in the opening hour as well. Put something at the top of the goalpost, because if the ball, if there's any doubt, if you can't tell with a naked eye that the ball, any part of the ball goes over the goalpost as opposed to inside of the goalpost, you go to the replay booth or you go to the motion sensor and, you know, did it go off? And if it doesn't, the kick is good. If it does, the kick is no good. The NFL is the only sport where you don't have to be definitive about something being good. You leave it to a subjective opinion. Take the subjectiveness out of the equation. Other sports do it. Other sports, it's simple. Did I sink the putt? Did I cross the finish line first? Right? Did the puck go in the net? Did the ball go in the hoop? Did the ball go through the goalpost? Or did it go over the crossbar? That's what you should be asking. Did the ball go over the crossbar? And if the answer is no, it's no good. And that includes over the upright. It's just not definitive enough for my liking. I wonder how it is for you. Certainly may give us your thoughts here at in the email address, on the phone, Twitter, or Facebook. Frank says the goalpost can be extended an additional 10 feet or more. This is a side view of how it can be done, yet stay solid without interference of high winds. And he sent the extended goalpost. So if it's extended an additional 10 feet or more, then I would say it'd probably be very difficult for most kickers, maybe not all, but most, to be able to get it up and over the upright. That if it, you know, was a normal kick, if it's going to go over the upright, then it's going to clang the top part of the goalpost. Frankly, that might be the easiest way to do it if you extend the goalpost up 10 feet. But then again, some guy's going to, you know, develop a kick or it's going to go over the goalpost anyway. And I'm going to say, well, geez, then what are we going to do? We're going to shoot lasers up into the sky? What are we going to do? How do we fix that problem? I think you may be just adding to the problem rather than actually trying to solve the problem. That's my whole point with that. All right, let's get one more email in here. We'll take a break, and then we'll get Mark Kelso on. Canadian Mike in Florida says, you can put a camera on top of the upright or an antenna that extends way above the upright because of the weight. If the technology exists, it should be used. Actually, I like that idea. You could put the antenna, you know, a good solid 6 to 10 feet on top of the goalpost. Because then, if the ball strikes the antenna, it's going to wiggle. That's why your flags, you know, they put the wind direction flags up there. Put the wind direction flags on top of the antenna. And if they, you know, I mean, I guess you could do it that way. Or certainly you could put the sensors in the antenna without having to actually extend the goalposts per se. And while the antennas could wiggle, I guess in the breeze, if it hits the antenna, the kick's no good. The kick is no good. It's that simple. Ball should go between the uprights, over the crossbar. Matter of semantics, I know now, especially in light of what happened on Sunday. Mike says, in the Pats game, the defense was playing well until the refs started flag fest, and then the D was confused and didn't know what to do, or more specific, what they could do, and it was all downhill from there. And that's actually a good point, Mike, because guys like Vince Wilfork said as much after the game. It's almost to the point like where they were frozen because they weren't sure what they could or couldn't do. And when you're caught thinking out there, you're doomed, man. Sometimes you're just doomed. You need to be able to react in a sport that moves at the speed of professional football. And if you are limited in your reaction time because you're worried about whether or not you're going to be called for a penalty that maybe previously wasn't a penalty, but it's being interpreted differently by guys that aren't as well trained out on the field, now you can begin to understand why some players are having a problem with all of this. All right, webradio at patriots.com. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Twitter, at jrook0722. And john.rook on Facebook. We'll get a timeout on here. We get some Buffalo Bills in here. Mark Kelso coming up in the playbook.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pats tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots LLC.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
I love.
Love.
Love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice. And football. And baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Hooked up, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
Welcome back in the Playbook. It's game week 4 for the Patriots, a 1-2 record against the 2-1 Buffalo Bills. Mark Kelso, who does the analysis on the Bills Radio Network, former defensive back for the team as well, joined us in the Playbook. Mark, thanks for a couple of minutes. I know that you're busy today, so we'll try not to keep you too long. I just quite simply want to get started with the fact that, you know, we know that C.J. Spiller is hurt. We know that Fred Jackson has been hobbled, but Jackson was back at practice today. And that this Buffalo team has done a great job of offense in September over the last couple of years. I think they're up at the top of the league in scoring points if you add the last two Septembers together, including this year. So how much is Jackson's presence over Spiller affect them, hurt them, help them, in your estimation?
Well, he's the best offensive player they have, Fred Jackson is, and CJ has really come into his own. So it'd be a great compliment to have them both on the field at the same time and be able to utilize CJ and out and the edge a little bit more than what Fred is used to. I mean, Fred runs a screen game exceptionally well, and CJ that as well under Fred tutelage, I think, and mentorship. But both really good players. I think CJ has blossomed into the player they thought he was going to be here when they drafted him in the first round a couple of years ago, and he's developed a lot more patience and has become a huge part of the offense. Really stepped up when Fred went down, and some other guys stepped up the other day when CJ went down. But you got to credit the entire, you know, offensive unit. I mean, guys have been and doing the things they need to do. Fred or Ryan Fitzpatrick has been playing well, with the exception of that first half in New York, and the offensive line has just been terrific. I mean, they have really begun to gel and develop some consistency and created a lot of opportunities in the running game, which Deshard Choice even again last week, and in C.J. Spiller's absence after his injury. He took advantage of that for almost 100 yards. So good offensive production all the way around. It would obviously help to have Fred back. I don't know where he's at, to tell you the truth. I mean, I haven't seen him. He is a very quick healer. But I wouldn't risk it if there was any chance that that he may re-injure the thing, because you'd hate to lose him for an extended period of time, as opposed to just this one game.
Mark, what are your thoughts behind this team being able to get out to such a hot start on offense early in the season and then struggling late? Is there a particular thing that you've seen or reason that you've seen as to why that might be the case?
Well, I mean, last year there was a lot of injuries in this team. I mean, they've grown into Coach Gailey's offense, and there's a lot of intricacies to it. There's a lot of weapons, and they have a lot of opportunity. I mean, last year this offensive line started to sustain injuries. They weren't able to develop any continuity there. They tried to move Andy Levitre around, so you start changing two and three positions when you have one guy injured. And then Fred Jackson went down, and CJ who had a terrific season in his absence, but still you need both of those guys in the lineup to be as productive as you think you can be offensively. So Ryan Fitzpatrick was nursing some injuries, so there were some injury issues, I think, which caused some problems. And in defensively, they were giving up a lot of points last year, and the offense kind of had to keep pace with them, and that was a tough pace to sustain throughout the course of the year. The defense was helping them with good field position by virtue of some turnovers, but when those dried up a little bit through the middle course of the year and later in the year, then the offense just wasn't able to put quite as many points on the board, and they weren't able to win. But I think if they can keep these guys healthy, I really like all the things that Ryan Fitzpatrick brings to the table. He's got a lot of weapons. He spreads the ball around a lot. They run the screen game extremely effectively and have a number of screens, much like New England does, to try to get the ball into the hands of their playmakers in space. So, I mean, I like their chances here as they progress through the season. This is a big week for them.
Sure.
To have New England at home and on the heels of a couple of defeats, and then the Bills end up going on the road for the next couple of weeks and play some really formidable opponents just like they will Sunday. So this is a big week for them to try to secure a home victory.
How is Stevie Johnson's development into a reliable receiver come along in your estimation? Is he and can he be, the go-to guy that Fitzpatrick looks for?
Yeah, I think he can be. Last week he looked like he was a step quicker than he had been the previous 2 weeks. So the injury that he was nursing a little bit looks to be even better to me. I mean, he had a hop in his step last week, and he's able to escape at the line of scrimmage. He's not a conventional route runner. He's going to find a way to get open. He's going to make some acrobatic catches, and Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to look for him, no question about that. So he's the guy. I mean, anybody can watch it on film and realize that he's kind of the go-to guy in critical situations when Ryan needs somebody, and he's going to make plays. I mean, and I think he is kind of accepted that role, and he showed a lot more maturity. I mean, it was all fun stuff, but with some of the stuff that happened last year with end zone celebrations and whatnot. But I think he's matured quite a bit, and I think again that happens when you have a quarterback, I think, who can lead your club and can let those guys know that the sum of the parts the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and we need everybody playing at their best to be productive.
Were you surprised that Brian Moorman was released?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, he's been a great asset to the Bills for the last over a decade. He's a terrific punter. I think one of the top in the league. He hadn't had the most productive punting days here the last few weeks, but very, very surprised at that move, and I'm not exactly sure why they made it. I haven't talked to anybody over there yet since that move has occurred. I have not talked to Brian, so very, very surprised that it happened at this point, after the third game of the season, and again, I'll probably have some more information here as I
sure
talk to some people in the building.
Sure. Defensively, Patriots fans are certainly aware that this team has made big improvements to the point where I think in the offseason, Buffalo was considered, Mark, to be one of the most improved teams, I think, in the league. And there were all sorts of, pundits and writers saying that Buffalo could easily challenge New England in the AFC East because of the offseason improvements, most notably a guy like Mark Anderson, who spent his season here last year. He's with you guys this year. What are your thoughts, at least through a few weeks now, on the changes that were made defensively?
Well, I mean, all this stuff is on paper. I mean, certainly on paper they made a lot of improvements, and you went into week one, and the Jets put up a lot of points, and people said, well, wait a minute, they've got to play a lot better than this. So they've got some youth, which brings with it youthful exuberance and energy, but also brings with it some mental mistakes and some experience mistakes, mistakes that you won't make once you've experienced some things, a number of times. I mean, things that you have to do precisely if in a defensive backfield if you're going to defeat a guy like Tom Brady and the offensive scheme that the Patriots put together. But they did all the right things on paper. I mean, they signed arguably the best free agent on the market. Mark Anderson has been terrific, rushing off the edge, coming back inside, putting pressure on the quarterback, forcing him out of the pocket. Kyle Williams is their best defensive player, I believe, and is completely disruptive on the inside. And Marcell Dareus had a great rookie year and is picking up where he left off. They've got youth and experience at the linebacker position, and the same thing can be said at the secondary. So they're solid across the board. They didn't put any pressure on the Jets in opening week. Last week against Cleveland, were able to do that, and don't like to bring a ton of pressure, but occasionally you'll bring five pass rushers, most of the time rushing four, sometimes bringing a linebacker and dropping Anderson in coverage, which he's pretty good at it, and can move around back there and in space and be able to defend some passes. So, I mean, they've done a good job thus far early in the season. The run defense against Trent Richardson last week was lights out, and they just and I think the offensive line of Cleveland's pretty good, and Richardson did some damage against what I think is a pretty good Cincinnati defensive front seven. So Bills defensively played really well, and it could only it raises expectations, I think, when they put together that kind of performance.
You know, it stands to reason with guys like Anderson and Mario Williams bookending your defensive line that you may not have to rush more than four, and I'm sure that's certainly been thought part of the thought process.
Yeah, no question. When you can put pressure on with four, you have much greater opportunity, and particularly against the Patriots, because if you can get some pressure with four guys, now you can use the safeties, utilize them in some double coverage situations, and try to take up some of those choice routes that Wes Welker runs, and try to double team Gronkowski coming out of the slot, or when he's in that flex position off his tight end normal alignment, and so you can dedicate those safeties to other responsibilities when you can rush and get pressure on the passer with
sure.
four, because you got your linebackers underneath, and it's a huge advantage defensively. I mean, just look at the results the Giants have had in recent years with their success and the myriad of defensive linemen that they use, and the Bills have a similar type situation developing in Buffalo with a whole bunch of guys. I mean, Chris Kelce goes in there as well, and Alex Carrington and Spencer Johnson. So they're using every one of those defensive tackles and defensive ends in a rotating fashion, so they can keep them fresh and just keep them coming and bringing pressure on that quarterback.
Mark, finally, you mentioned earlier that this was clearly a big game for Buffalo. You got to get ready to go on the road after a couple here. Buffalo did beat the Patriots once last year to snap that long losing streak, and so they feel like they can belong now. And if Buffalo is, of course, too challenged in the AFC East, they certainly have to win one at home. So is this too early in the season to say big game, must win? How do the players view this, maybe just as another game?
Yeah, A and not B. It's a big game. It's not a must win.
Right.
I mean, you've got to play well. I think you got to play well, and you got to let, I think, New England know that you're going to be there come December when it comes down to it in the AFC East. Now with the slow start that the Patriots have had and the unfortunate start with the two losses, and now you got to say that, I mean, if you can continue to beat teams that you're supposed to beat and win games at home with your crowd, providing some energy for you, that you have an opportunity to challenge for the division lead. And that means they have to put together a great effort against the Patriots and let them know that they're not going away for the entire balance of the year. And then they're in their building. So you would think that would, if they can play toe-to-toe with them, and that would give them a little bit of an advantage being in their home building and the crowd noise behind them and causing problems at the line of scrimmage with the audible situation and Tom Brady. So hopefully that would give advantage to the Bills' defense in that situation and That's a situation I think that the Bills are happy to be in coming into this game, and I think they're going to expect to come in there and come out with a victory, but it's going to take an outstanding effort on Sunday afternoon.
Mark, thanks so much for the time today. We certainly appreciate it, and continued success to you.
Great. Thank you very much, guys.
You
have
bet.
A good day.
Uh-huh. Mark Kelso, again, who is on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network as their analyst, teaming up with play-by-play man John Murphy and a former player for the Bills as well, giving us some insight and their point of view. And certainly you wouldn't expect him to say, oh, the Buffalo Bills, they're shaking in their boots. There's no way they can stay on the field with the New England Patriots. You know, yeah, they got to be brimming with confidence. Have to be brimming with confidence. Why? Because they beat them last year. They finally got off the schneid and knocked the Patriots off a year ago. So, no, they don't have any doubt in their mind that they can win the game. And quite frankly, you know, as I mentioned, it's a team that, you know, leads the NFL in scoring in the month of September over the last 2 years combined. So they do get off to solid, if not outright hot, starts on offense. But can they stop the other guys? They certainly didn't do it in week one against the Jets, as we all know. But they have improved over the last couple of weeks, both wins. They'll get every opportunity to continue to improve. As the Patriots did put 30 points up, as we talked about on the opening hour today, they put 30 points up on what we thought might be the best defense in the AFC in Baltimore this last week. All right, back to a couple of the emails here before we get off to Kerry Byrne and cold hard football facts here on Patriots.com radio. If that is the best game, this is from Sean in New Hampshire. If that's the best game McCourty can play, and we were talking about McCourty earlier, then we're winning 10 games. We'll get a wild card. We'll lose in the second round on the road in the final drive against a passing team like Schaub or Manning or Flacco or Roethlisberger. Take your pick. People want to defend him and counter my last comment saying, there goes that. That is having blinders on. And it's all BS. And last time I checked, we didn't win the Super Bowl last year because the corners crapped themselves and allowed the Giants to move the ball by passing when it mattered in the second half. He's not clutch. He never will be. Stop defending him. And he stinks, and fans stink if they don't realize that he stinks. Take the blinders off. I had hope for Dowling or Dennard, but none left for McCourty. I'm going to stay on him until he becomes clutch. Well, make sure he knows that, Sean. Clay in Foster, Rhode Island says, guys, if that game was one of McCourty's best efforts, and we were talking about the Baltimore game, then we are in big trouble. I see very little difference between this year's D and last year's D. Few new faces, but very similar results. So frustrating. Well, there's no question, Clay, that they took a step back against Baltimore based on what we saw in the first two games. They did take a step back. But there was enough there. They just didn't make a play when they needed to in the second half. There was enough there. I mean, they did have a 13-point lead early. They did have a 6-point lead at halftime. They did have a 9-point lead with under 5 minutes to play. They didn't make the play when they needed to. Had that turned out to be a 30-21 win as opposed to a 31-30 loss, I think we'd all be saying, damn, what a great defense we had. It's amazing, though, what the thought process is over a span of about 4 minutes, which is really all we're talking about here is about 4 minutes. So Jay says, a small part of me hopes the refs don't come back for a while. It's frustrating, but it's also fun to watch. People love a good car wreck. I said this yesterday, by the way. I also love letting the players play a bit more. Well, they're not. The problem is that the replacement officials aren't letting the players play at all. Too many flags. 30 flags, 24 accepted, Sunday night in the Patriots-Ravens game. Jay says the other part just wants to see a good team play a good team and not play the refs as well, which is what happened. With the bad calls, no excuses, Packers had plenty of plays and chances to win that game. Blame their Swiss cheese O-line. Patriots had many chances to win their game. They just didn't execute, and we got to be better. True. Trevor in Minneapolis. Hats off to Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees for getting more vocal this week with the terrible officiating. More of the league stars should speak up. What's 20,000 or so, or whatever the fine may be, thrown their way to them? And he says, going to be a big win on Sunday. Well, maybe for a little more on whether or not it'll be a big win on Sunday or not. And obviously a lot of the other things going on in the National Football League. Kerry Byrne, who comes up just after this program in about 3 or 4 minutes from now, Cold Hard Football Facts. What were your thoughts on Sunday overall?
Well, John, I got to tell you, you get a lot of emails there from Patriots fans concerned about the performance of the defense.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We're going to get into a lot of statistical detail about why those concerns are very legitimate, a lot of things to worry about. I know the team devoted a lot of resources, especially in the draft, to getting defenders, getting younger, getting faster. And right now, We have not seen that. In fact, right now on pace to be the worst pass defense in Patriots history, which is an issue. I know only three games into the season, but we're gonna dive deep into that.
So already now, 3 weeks into the season, they're on pace to do way worse than last year's defense.
They are 9 points worse in defensive passer rating. What that is a formula for quarterbacks applied to pass defense, okay? And it has a huge correlation to Super Bowl success throughout history. And right now, it's not good. I mean, the statistical fingerprints right now, John, aren't good, and I think those fans have legit reason. I mean, they have every reason to be a little concerned if this defense is taking the right steps to get better and to become a Super Bowl caliber unit.
I don't think I like hearing this.
No, you know what? That's why, John, we are the cold, hard football facts. We don't tell you what you want to hear. We tell you what the numbers are telling us, and sometimes it's painful. The truth hurts, which is what we tell all our readers.
All right. So as far as the cold, hard football facts are concerned, what are some of the positives? I won't make you give away your whole show, but something to just tease the listeners with a little bit here.
Well, you know, listen, they still have – I'm still not worried about the offense, obviously. A little – you know, right now Tom Brady's not been the Tom Brady we saw over the last 5 years, but I'm not worried about that. He's still one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL. But what's interesting, John, if you look at, you know, all the – there's six active quarterbacks who won Super Bowls, you know – and right now they are combined 6-12 between the Manning brothers.
I saw
Drew
that.
Brees,
yeah, I saw
Peyton,
that this
know,
week.
And,
I saw that
know,
one.
So,
right.
And if you look at the guy, you know, look at guys like Kevin Kolb and Matt Ryan and all these young guns who are undefeated. You know, I mean, it's kind of. I wonder if this, John, is a changing of the guard season in the NFL. It's something to think about because right now, you know, the NFL provides surprises every year, and right now I think we're all a little. You know, surprised by who the powers are in the NFL and how some of the tried and true quarterbacks like Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, you know, both 1-2, Big Ben 1-2, Aaron Rodgers 1-2, obviously under
right.
under controversial circumstances.
Right.
But it's going to be interesting to see if the old guard of NFL quarterbacks can regain their status at top
why, what, any thoughts, just personal thoughts as to why that's happened here, or is that just a statistical anomaly?
Well, you know, in the case of the Patriots, okay, which is what we care about here, right? I mean, they played a much better than anyone expected defense in Arizona, which now has proven itself a pretty good defense through 3 weeks.
You'd have to say, especially,
know, the Ravens are a pretty good team that they played on the road and fought them tooth and nail. That's not a loss to be ashamed. You know, you lose those games sometimes in the NFL. Even the mighty Patriots lose those games. So I don't think it's panic time for Patriots at all. I think they're still an 11, 12, 13 win team. There's still a team that's going to be there at the end, but they do have things they have to improve.
All right. Good stuff. Kerry, good to see you as always.
John, always a pleasure.
He's got great things coming up. We want you to stay tuned. Cold Hard Football Facts coming up in just a couple of minutes right here on Patriots.com Radio. Our thanks to Mark Kelso, the Bills radio analyst, for joining us in the playbook. And, of course, Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly for being here as well to get us kicked off tomorrow. Same Pats time, same Pats channel, 2 p.m. Eastern. We will talk more about the Buffalo Bills. We'll certainly take a look at what maybe the latest would be in terms of Fred Jackson's availability. There is some thought process to C.J. Spiller trying to suit it up as well on Sunday, which would give them an incredible punch on the offensive side, and that's where you would think that it sounds to me like this could be a real shootout in the making on Sunday if the Patriots let it.
Don't sleep on that Buffalo offense, that's for sure.
That's very, very true. And, of course, Russell Baxter will join us as he does on Thursdays in the playbook as well. Until next time, so long, everybody. Kerry Byrne coming up next.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.